Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're plunging into something, well, pretty essential. How we keep the lights on, especially now with all the changes happening.
It's a huge topic.
Yeah. You know, when you think about managing the power grid, maybe you picture, I don't know, big wires, transformers.
The traditional stuff, yeah.
Exactly. But the reality, especially somewhere like Denmark, which is really pushing green energy, it's way more digital, it's dynamic. Honestly, it feels kind of futuristic.
It absolutely is. And Denmark's TSO, that's their transmission system operator, Energinet, they're right at the forefront of this.
Okay.
They're dealing with this unprecedented shift. You've got massive amounts of wind and solar coming online.
Right, which isn't constant.
Not at all. Plus, you know, distributed energy, like rooftop solar everywhere, new players in the market, it all adds just huge variability and complexity into a system that, well, it just has to work. All the time.
So that's our mission for this deep dive then. We want to uncover how Energinet is actually tackling these challenges. We'll look at the tech they're using, some pretty cutting edge stuff.
Really.
The organizational changes they're making, which are just as important, right?
Usually, yeah.
And then the data side, how they manage all that information, the risks involved. Basically, how are they keeping the lights on through all this complexity?
And some of the tools are fascinating.
Oh yeah, we'll get into that. Things like virtual copies of the grid digital twins, they call them. AI simulations predicting problems. And yeah, even actual robot dogs checking out substations.
It's a really comprehensive strategy. It gives you a real peek into where grid management is headed.
Okay, let's unpack this. First up, the tech revolution. How technology is boosting grid stability. Because it's not just about adding more physical wires, is it?
No, not at all. It's about deploying these advanced digital solutions, things that give them better situational awareness, better prediction, and ultimately better control.
So where do we start? Digital twins.
That's a great place to start. Digital twins and AI simulation. It's pretty groundbreaking work.
So digital twin.
Hmm.
What is that exactly in this grid context?
Okay, so think of it like a dynamic real-time virtual copy, a replica.
Or the physical grid.
Yeah, of grid components, or maybe even the whole grid eventually. And because it's virtual, operators can use it to simulate all sorts of scenarios.
Like what if situation.
Exactly. What if this line goes down? What if demand spikes? They can see potential problems in the simulation long before they could ever affect the real grid.
And Energinet's actually doing this.
Oh, yeah. They're pioneers here. They've been piloting concepts using autonomous robots like drones and, yes, those robot dogs.
That's a good.
To actually scan substations. They build these incredibly detailed 3D models.
Okay.
And those models become the digital twins for those specific assets. So they can monitor equipment health, plan maintenance better, test scenarios. All completely safely in the virtual world.
That sounds incredibly useful. Is this just an Energinet thing or are others looking at it?
No, it's definitely catching on. ENTSOE, that's the big association for European TSOs.
Right.
They see digital twins as a major strategic priority. Right up there with AI and machine learning. There's even a big project called TwineU, aiming for a kind of federated European grid twin.
Wow. Cross borders.
Yeah, for cross-border simulations. The ambition is huge. But what makes Energinet... They're boosting them with AI.
Ah, okay. So the AI comes in to make the simulations faster.
Smarter.
Both, really.
Mm-hmm.
AI-driven simulation capabilities, they just massively speed things up. Energinet worked on this cloud-based analysis platform.
Okay.
They basically took a standard simulation tool, Power Factory, and containerized it, ran it on Azure Cloud Infrastructure.
Okay.
And the results were just, well, much faster, more precise. It lets them run automated, high-speed contingency analyses.
Contingency analyses, that's simulating things going right, like a generator trip. Exactly. Or a line fault, or a sudden demand surge, stuff you have to be ready for. Traditionally, running lots of those simulations took ages.
Hours. Days.
Sometimes. But this AI-accelerated setup, it can crunch through hundreds of those what-if scenarios in, like, minutes.
Minutes. That's a game changer for the control room.
It absolutely is. It gives operators this super high resolution view of grid resilience almost in real time.
So how does this AI simulation compare to the traditional physics-based kind? Because those are really accurate, right?
Right.
But slow.
That's the key trade-off. Physics-based models are precise, built on fundamental laws, great for known conditions. But yeah, computationally heavy, slow, maybe not great for totally novel situations.
Okay.
AI models, once you train them on enough data, are lightning fast. They can spot complex patterns maybe a human wouldn't see, and they adapt as new data flows in.
But there's a downside.
Well, they need lots of good, clean data to learn. And sometimes how they reach a conclusion can be a bit of a black box.
Hard to understand why it made that decision.
Right. So you need really rigorous validation to trust them. Often, the best approach is using both. AI for speed and spotting patterns, physics models for deep understanding and validation.
So this isn't just academic. It's actually giving operators tools to be proactive, not just reactive. Preparing for trouble before it hits.
Precisely. It's shifting towards truly predictive grid management. And beyond just simulation, you know, actual grid stability relies on really fast automated actions.
Faster than humans can react.
Much faster.
Yeah.
Which is essential as the grid gets more complex and, frankly, less predictable with all the renewables.
So what does that look like? How do you automate control?
Well, one area is wide area monitoring and control. Using more PMUs, phaser measurement units.
PMUs, right, those are like super accurate grid sensors.
Exactly. They give you incredibly precise time-stamped readings of voltage and current phase angles. Think of it like knowing the grid's heartbeat, moment by moment, everywhere.
Okay.
This lets you spot tiny oscillations or frequency deviations really early. If the grid's frequency, its heartbeat, gets unstable, that's bad news.
So AI can watch this PMU data?
Yes. AI can analyze that stream constantly, detect anomalies, and then trigger corrective actions in fractions of a second.
Like what kind of actions?
Adjusting power flow on HVDC links, maybe activating reserve power, things to damp down oscillations and keep that frequency stable. This is becoming even more critical as we lose the inertia from big old power plants.
And it's not just monitoring, right? You mentioned adaptive protection systems.
Yeah, that's another layer. Traditional protection systems on lines and equipment have fixed settings.
Okay.
But with power flows changing so rapidly now, sometimes those fixed settings aren't optimal. AI-enhanced protection can actually adjust its settings based on real-time grid conditions.
So it's smarter about when to trip a line. Avoids unnecessary outages, but still clears real faults quickly.
That's the idea. More intelligence, more flexibility. And then you get to the really visible automation out in the field, the robots.
The robot dogs. Tell me more about what they're actually doing.
Okay, so EnergyNet's trials, they show these robots, spot robots usually.
Right.
They're not just scanning substations to build those digital twins we talked about. They're doing routine visual and thermal inspections, checking gauges, listening for weird noises, even apparently scaring birds away from sensitive equipment.
Oh, seriously? Bird patrol?
Seems like it. And think about the safety aspect. Sending a robot into a high voltage area instead of a person.
Yeah, that's a huge benefit. And drones, too.
Drones, autonomous vehicles, patrolling transmission lines, looking for vegetation growing too close, checking for damaged insulators, maybe even doing minor fixes someday. They're like remote eyes and ears and potentially hands for the control center. Safer, faster, often more efficient.
It's amazing the amount of data collection and automation. Does this also help get more out of the existing grid, like dynamic ratings?
Yes, absolutely. Dynamic asset ratings, you put sensors on transformers, on lines, measure their actual temperature, factor in the weather.
Yeah.
And AI can then calculate in real time how much power they can safely carry right now. Sometimes, especially if it's cold and windy, that's significantly more than their static, conservative nameplate rating.
So you squeeze more capacity out of the wires you already have.
Exactly. And combine that with automated power rerouting, and you can often manage congestion or peaks without having to build expensive new lines. It's about optimizing the assets you've got.
But they're not flipping a switch to full automation overnight, are they?
No, definitely not. EnergyNet has a phased roadmap. It starts with getting the data foundations right, then building the twins and simulations, then moving to AI assisting operators.
So decision support first.
Right. AI makes recommendations, humans approve. Then gradually, maybe moving towards limited autonomous actions for specific well-defined situations, probably around 2027, 2028 is the goal, but always with strict criteria, human oversight, and robust fallback systems. Safety is paramount.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But all this real-time complexity, it makes prediction even more critical, doesn't it? How do you stop problems before they start? Sounds like machine learning for forecasting is key.
It's absolutely the linchpin. Accurate forecasts underpin almost everything in preventive stability management. Take renewable generation, now casting predicting output in the next few minutes or hours.
Yeah, a cloud bank rolling over a solar farm can change output massively, right?
Instantly. Or wind dropping off. makes balancing the grid incredibly challenging. So EnergyNet is looking hard at AI models that use way more data-detailed weather from the Danish Met Institute, satellite images, even ground-based sky cameras.
Their high
Yeah,
cameras.
looking directly up to predict cloud cover effects on local solar PV. The goal is much higher precision in those short-term forecasts. National Grid ESO in the UK did something similar.
Oh,
They
yeah.
used machine learning, improved their solar forecasting accuracy by about a third.
33%? Wow.
Yeah, and that directly translated into needing less expensive spinning reserves standing by, which saved consumers money.
So better forecasts mean a more efficient, cheaper grid. And it's not just renewables, right? Load forecasting, too.
Definitely. ML models can find really complex patterns in electricity demand, factoring in weather, holidays, weekends, industrial activity, even data from smart appliances or EV charging
Of
patterns.
much more granular load forecasts.
Exactly. Which helps with things like proactive voltage control or predicting where congestion might pop up, and also, crucially, predicting the availability of flexible demand as more consumers sign up for demand response programs.
Where they agree to cut usage briefly when needed.
Right. The grid operator needs to know reliably how much of that flexible load is actually available at any given time. ML can help predict that.
And I heard you mention predicting stability margins. What does that mean?
Yeah, this is really advanced stuff. AI isn't just forecasting the inputs like load or wind. It's trying to predict the outcome, how close the overall grid system is to an instability threshold.
Like a voltage collapse or losing synchronization.
Exactly. Things like voltage stability indices, transient stability margins. The AI can act like a sort of smart advisor, analyzing the current state and warning the control room, hey, this part of the grid looks weak right now if X happens.
Giving them that early warning about hidden vulnerabilities.
Precisely. These are the invisible systems, the algorithms working behind the scenes, making the grid stronger, more efficient, more resilient. It's quite
It
remarkable.
really is. But, having all this amazing tech, it's only one part of the puzzle, isn't it? It only works if the organization, the people, can actually use it effectively.
You've absolutely hit on a critical point, the human factor, organizational transformation.
So connecting this tech to the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Keeping the grid stable, it's not just a technical problem. It needs a shift in how people work together, how decisions get made.
Totally. And historically, TSOs, like many large organizations, have tended to work in silos. You have the operations department, planning, IT, maybe cybersecurity, all kind of separate.
Which can slow things down, block information flow.
Exactly. EnergyNet saw this. They've actively worked to break down those silos. They actually integrated their innovation efforts directly into the IT organization.
Okay.
So now you have around 500 people in IT working on digital solutions and, crucially, using agile methods. They form these multidisciplinary teams.
Mixing different skills together.
Right. You've got software developers, data engineers, grid planners, even control room operators, all working shoulder to shoulder on the same projects from the start.
And the benefit there must be huge. You're directly linking the tech development with the people who actually run the grid day to day.
Precisely. It strengthens the tech development because it's grounded in real needs, and it strengthens security and operations because they understand the tech better.
Breaking down the walls. Are they creating new kinds of roles too? I read something about digital grid analysts.
Yeah, they're looking at things like that. Formalizing roles that bridge the gap between traditional grid engineering and data science or software, also setting up innovation hubs or labs for rapid prototyping.
Trying things out quickly.
Yeah, and collaborating externally too with startups, universities, like that cloud simulation project we mentioned earlier. It fosters a culture where it's okay to experiment, even to fail sometimes, as long as you learn from it. That's vital for innovation.
And this change goes right into how they manage projects too, right? Moving away from old school methods.
Definitely. A big shift from traditional, rigid waterfall project management.
Where everything's planned out up front.
Right. To more agile approaches like Scrum or SAFe, breaking work into short sprints, maybe 2 or 4 weeks, having regular demos, getting feedback, adapting as you go, much faster delivery for digital projects.
And they're thinking about organizing around products. What does that mean?
Instead of just having functional departments, you organize around a specific outcome or service, a product, like, say, a real-time balancing platform.
Okay.
Then you have a dedicated, multi-skilled team that owns that product through its entire lifecycle development, deployment, operation, improvement.
So they're constantly aligned with what the business actually needs from that platform.
Exactly. It fits really well with modern practices like DevOps and DevSecOps, bringing development, operations, and security much closer together. Faster, safer software
But
delivery.
you still need some high-level direction, right, with all these agile seats.
Absolutely. They have strategic oversight, often through something like a digital transformation steering committee that would have executives from ops, IT, security, maybe a chief digital officer, setting the priorities, resolving conflicts between teams.
So it's agile but not chaotic.
Precisely. It's about empowering teams, but within a clear strategic framework. It really underlines that grid stability today needs this fundamental shift in work culture and structure.
And underpinning all that tech, all that collaboration, is the data. Which brings us to the next piece, the data backbone, information and data governance. Because EnergyNet must be dealing with just astronomical amounts of data.
Absolutely massive volumes. You've got the real-time SCADA data, that's the system monitoring and controlling the physical grid, side market data, weather data, detailed information about every asset on the network. It's a flood.
So how do you manage that? How do you make sure systems can talk to each other? Interoperability seems key.
It's non-negotiable. EnergyNet heavily relies on common standards. The big ones are the IEC's Common Information Model, CIM, and the Common Grid Model Exchange Specification, CGMES.
Okay, CIM and CGMES.
CIM is basically a standard dictionary defining all the objects in a power system, lines, transformers, switches, and their relationships. CGMES is the standard format for exchanging grid models based on CIM. In fact, CGMES is mandated across Europe for exchanging grid data between TSOs.
So everyone's speaking the same language data-wise.
That's the goal. It means their internal systems can integrate more easily, and they can seamlessly exchange data with neighbors in Germany or Sweden. Reduces errors, reduces the need for clunky custom translators, makes everything much smoother.
Okay, so you have standard models, but how do people find the data they need? And trust it, I know EnergyNet has an open data portal, Energy Data Service.
Yeah, for external sharing. Internally, a key tool is a data catalog.
Like a library catalog for data.
Pretty much. It's an index inventory of all their data sets, their data streams. And it includes metadata information about the data. Where did it come from? What's its quality? Who owns it? How often is it updated?
So you know what you're looking at.
Exactly. And then you use semantic integration, often using those CIM standards, to link related data together. So a specific substation's ID in the asset database can be linked directly to its real-time measurements coming from SCADA and also to its maintenance history.
Creating that single version of truth.
Right. Which is incredibly valuable. It means engineers and analysts spend way less time just finding and cleaning data wrangling, and more time actually using it for analysis and making better decisions. That directly improves grid operations.
This brings up the architecture question. How do you store and manage all this data? We hear terms like data lake and data mesh. What's the difference?
Yeah, it's a core question. A traditional data lake is basically a big central repository. You dump all your data in there, raw data, processed data, and a central team usually manages it.
Advantages.
Easy to collect everything in one place, maybe easier to apply uniform tools. Disadvantages: it can become a data swamp if it's not well governed, just a mess of unusable data. And the central team can become a bottleneck for access or understanding the context of the data.
Okay, so what's a data mesh then?
Data mesh takes a decentralized approach. Different domain teams, like the grid operations team or the market analysis team, they own their data as a product.
Data as a product.
Yeah. They're responsible for cleaning it, preparing it, and publishing it in a way that's easily usable by others with clear standards and documentation.
Advantages there.
The people who understand a data best, the domain experts, are responsible for its quality. It avoids the central bottleneck. Data products are tailored for specific uses. The challenge: you need really strong central governance to ensure standards are followed. Otherwise, you just end up with new silos. And the domain teams need data engineering skills.
So which way is EnergyNet leaning? Lake or mesh?
Given their scale and needs, probably a hybrid approach makes the most sense. Maybe a core data lake for storing the massive volumes of raw, unprocessed data, but then layering a data mesh on top for curated, high-quality, ready-to-use data sets served as products.
Best of both worlds, maybe.
Potentially. The ultimate goal is getting the right data in the right shape to the right people and algorithms reliably and quickly. That's the foundation for everything else.
Now, shifting focus a bit. All these strategies at EnergyNet, they don't happen in a vacuum, right? They're deeply connected to what's happening across Europe with EU directives and initiatives.
Absolutely. And it's not just about ticking compliance boxes. EnergyNet often uses these EU rules as drivers for innovation and strategic advantage. They help shape the future European grid.
Okay, give me an example. What about demand response?
Right. There's a new Network Code on Demand Response, NCDR. It was just submitted in May 2024.
What's the aim there?
The big goal is unlocking flexibility from the demand side from consumers across Europe. Think smart thermostats, EV chargers, industrial processes that can adjust consumption slightly. The code sets out rules for aggregating these small resources and letting them participate in electricity markets, helping balance the grid and integrate more renewables.
And EnergyNet's tech, we talk about the forecasting, the control systems. That's essential to actually make this work, isn't it?
Totally crucial. You need sophisticated IT to manage potentially thousands, even millions, of small aggregated resources bidding into markets and responding to signals in near real time. Their AI forecasting for predicting demand response availability is a perfect example.
Okay, what about the supply side? Generators?
There's an established EU code for that, too. The Requirements for Generators Code, or RFG, from back in 2016.
What does that do?
It harmonizes the technical standards that all new generators connecting to the grid must meet. Things like being able to control voltage, ride through grid faults without tripping offline, provide frequency support.
Even for smaller ones, like solar farms.
Yes, that's key. It ensures that new generators, regardless of size or type, are built to be active, helpful participants in grid stability and not just passive energy injectors that might cause problems.
And EnergyNet can then use those capabilities.
Exactly. Because the capabilities are mandated by the code, EnergyNet can rely on them being there and build tools to utilize them, like calling on wind farms to provide synthetic inertia or faster frequency response when needed.
Makes sense. Then there's cybersecurity and IS2. That sounds important.
Hugely important. NIS2 is the EU's updated cybersecurity directive for essential services, including energy. It significantly broadens the scope and tightens the requirements compared to the original NIS directive.
Covering what specifically?
It covers both traditional IT systems and the crucial operational technology, the OT, like the SCADA systems controlling the grid. It mandates things like rigorous risk assessments, managing vulnerabilities, reporting significant incidents very quickly,
How quickly?
sometimes within 24 hours for initial notification, plus strong requirements around supply chain security, vetting your software and hardware vendors, and the potential fines for non-compliance are substantial.
So all this digital transformation, the cloud platforms, the AI, it all has to be secure by design, right? Baked in from the start.
Absolutely. Security can't be an afterthought. If they're using cloud services, they need secure configurations. If they're deploying AI, they need to protect the models from tampering, consider risks like data poisoning, ensure vendor tools are secure. It's fundamental. A cyber attack could easily trigger a blackout.
Physical security and cybersecurity are really two sides of the same coin now.
They absolutely are. And finally, you can't forget data privacy, GDPR.
How does GDPR relate to grid stability?
Well, as the grid gets smarter, it inevitably starts touching on personal data. Think smart meter readings that show household consumption patterns, EV charging data linked to individuals, even employee data within EnergyNet.
Okay.
GDPR sets strict rules: lawful and transparent processing, minimizing data collection, protecting the data, giving individuals rights over their information.
So privacy needs to be built in too.
Yes. Privacy by design. Data governance needs to classify sensitive data. AI models using personal data need careful handling, maybe using de-identified or aggregated data where possible. It's about maintaining public trust as you deploy these powerful new technologies.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground. Amazing tech, new ways of working, smart data handling, the European context. But embracing all this digital innovation, it brings new risks. That has to be acknowledged.
It absolutely does. Which brings us to the safety net.
Yeah.
How do you mitigate the risks that come with AI systems and all these external dependencies?
It's critical, especially for essential infrastructure. What are the big risks with AI in the grid?
Well, a recent U.S. Department of Energy report laid out four main categories. First, adversarial attacks someone intentionally trying to fool or poison the AI, maybe by feeding it bad data.
Okay.
Second, unintentional failures. The AI just gets it wrong due to some unforeseen situation or limitation in its training. Third, attackers could actually use AI themselves for malicious purposes against the grid. And fourth, risks in the supply chain compromised AI tools or libraries from vendors.
That's quite a list. How do you guard against those? Let's start with protecting the AI itself.
One is robust training and testing. You need clean, validated, representative training data. You need extensive testing, trying to find edge cases where it might fail, rigorous verification before you let it near the controls.
And guarding against those adversarial attacks.
That involves protecting the training data itself, making sure it hasn't been tampered with, using techniques to make the models more resilient, secure repositories for the AI models, and critically, monitoring the AI's inputs and outputs for anything weird or unexpected. Plus, always having those fallback mechanisms, simpler rule-based systems ready to take over if the AI behaves strangely.
And the human element is still key,
right?
The human in the loop.
Absolutely non-negotiable, especially early on. Operators must retain ultimate control. AI provides recommendations, maybe flags issues, but a human makes the critical call. You need clear policies on AI governance, defining autonomy levels, accountability, transparency.
And you have to keep watching the AI after it's deployed.
Continuous monitoring, yes. Tools to track its performance. Watch for data drift, where the real-world data starts looking different from the training data, which can hurt accuracy. You need alerts and automatic fallback if the AI's health degrades. Treat it like any critical piece of equipment that needs monitoring.
Beyond AI, TSOs like EnergyNet depend on so many external vendors. Software, hardware, cloud. That seems like another big risk area.
It is. Managing supply chain risk is huge. For cloud providers, you need strong contracts, service level agreements, or SLAs, clear backup plans, maybe using multiple cloud regions or even multiple providers for redundancy.
What about software vendors? Off-the-shelf tools, libraries?
You need processes to track vulnerabilities in the software you use. Maybe using a software bill of materials, an SBOM, which lists all the components. You need to vet your critical suppliers carefully, which NIS2 actually mandates now. Maybe things like source code escrow for really vital tools or ensuring you have in-house expertise to maintain them if needed.
And this applies to physical hardware too, presumably. Spare parts.
Yes, definitely. Supply chain resilience for critical equipment like transformers, mm-hmm. Planning for disruptions, holding strategic spares, maybe mutual support agreements with neighboring TSOs to share equipment in an emergency.
And even data providers,
yeah.
Like weather forecasts.
You need redundancy there too, maybe multiple weather providers, and certainly redundant communication paths for the critical control signals going out to the grid. You can't have a single point of failure.
It's interesting how complying with regulations like NIS2 and GDPR actually helps manage these risks directly.
It absolutely does. They force you to implement good practices around security, data handling, vendor management. Compliance isn't just bureaucracy, it builds resilience. And looking ahead, TSOs need to monitor upcoming rules too, like the EU AI Act.
What will that do?
It's going to impose specific obligations on high-risk AI systems, which grid control AI certainly would be. Things like mandatory documentation, transparency requirements, ensuring human oversight. So getting ahead of that is important.
It really comes down to having a comprehensive plan for digital risk and resilience, treating these new digital threats with the same seriousness as, say, a physical storm hitting the grid.
Exactly that. It's a whole new dimension of risk management.
So wrapping this up, EnergyNet really is pioneering a new way of managing the grid. It's less about just building more physical stuff and more about intelligence, integration, using data smartly.
Right. We've seen how they're bringing together advanced tech AI, digital twins, automation with changes in how people work, agile methods, breaking silos underpinned by solid data governance and standards.
And all aligned with the direction Europe is heading, using regulations like RFG and NCDR, not just as rules to follow, but as opportunities to make the grid better, more flexible.
Turning challenges into advantages. Using
the balance between the incredible benefits, the speed, the efficiency, and that critical need for human oversight, for resilience that just cannot fail.
And what role does transparency, public trust play in all this? As these powerful, often invisible systems become ever more central to our lives.
Something for all of us to think about. We hope this deep dive gave you a clearer picture of the amazing innovation happening right now, just to keep our lights on.